From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Talk about versatility. Jack O'Brien has won two Tonys and for incredibly different productions, Hairspray and Henry IV. His latest endeavor brings him back to the Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center with Tom Stoppard's trilogy, The Coast of Utopia. This extraordinary project about five Russian intellectuals in the mid-19th century requires 6 months of rehearsal and involves 44 actors in rotating repertory performances. Shipwreck, the second piece in the trilogy, opens tomorrow night, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Jack O'Brien back to my show today. Hello.
Hello. I'm delighted to be here.
Is there something that the very different plays you've directed, and I can mention some, you have four shows running in New York right now, Hairspray, the two Utopias, How the Grinch Stole Christmas,
yes,
and then you have Dirty Rotten Scoundrels touring nationally. You also are the artistic director of the Old Globe in San Diego. But is there anything that ties all of the things together? Am I missing something?
No, I get asked that a great deal. And I keep saying, I'm the kid in the barnyard who kept lifting the calf until it turned out to be, well, pure bull in my case, I'm afraid. But I ran the Globe basically for 25 years. I was the artistic director there, and it's one of those situations that if you are the head honcho, the enchilada at a regional theater, you pick up everything that falls off the wagon, and you learn how to do a lot of different things. Prior to that, of course, I mean, I was a musical comedy baby when I was out of college. So in an odd way, the West Coast never knew. How do I put this? Yes, the West Coast never knew my musical work, and the East Coast never knew my classical work until maybe the last 10, 15 years.
So you some directors specialize. You didn't resist the tendency, just life intruded.
I specialized in doing work as much as I could. I just wanted to go from project to project. But yeah, I think that's basically true, Leonard.
When did you do your first Stoppard piece?
That would be Hapgood. Gosh, I have no rear view mirror. I'm never good with dates. But
had you met Tom Stoppard?
We had met briefly, sort of en passant, he and I. We were introduced by the producer, Manny Eisenberg, at a breakfast because at one point they were looking for a place to shake down and sort of fix Hapgood, which is a very thorny, very complicated, very dense script indeed.
Unlike the
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's quantum physics. At least, you know, I've got a fighting chance with the Russian Revolution or the backstory. But quantum physics, spooning that into me, took a little patience, I can tell you that. And at any rate, they were looking for a place to do it over here. And at one point, Manny thought that the Globe in San Diego would be an appropriate venue. And under those circumstances, I met Tom. And then they went, as we say in the business, in another direction. And Tom, who's an incredibly caring, unbelievably gentlessa kind of human being, always felt that we had been shabbily treated. I didn't think so, but he did. And so when Stockard Channing was in London doing 6 Degrees of Separation, he took her the script to Hapgood, and he said, would you like to do this? And she said, yes, and I think Jack O'Brien should direct it. And he lit up and said, but I owe him one. Now, this would be one. And that's how we met.
Well, it's an odd situation because he's also worked a lot with Trevor Nunn. And Trevor Nunn did Arcadia Here. You did Hapgood. You also did Invention of Love. And then we have a situation with these plays where Trevor Nunn did them in London and you did them here.
Well, you know, that I'm fond of saying swiftly, any success I've had with Tom's work has been on the backs of some pretty great directors. I mean, Richard Eyre did Invention of Love, and Peter Wood had done Hapgood, and these are gentlemen that had great experience with Tom, and I was able, well, I didn't see the Hapgood, but I did see Invention, and I did see Trevor's production. And don't forget that when Trevor was staging The Coast of Utopia, Part 1, Tom was still writing Part 3. And my theory is that it's like me. I feel I like to see a Stoppard play more than once because it resonates on so many different levels. And in the case of Coast of Utopia, I've had the great benefit of, 4 years of preparation.
You saw the other production, and did you think at the time, this is something I would like to attempt mounting in New York?
No. On the contrary. Well, I wanted to run screaming as far east as I could get. I thought, I don't know what to do with this piece. This is a monument. This is a Leviathan of a piece. I had really no... I think it was assumed by Tom that I would do it. And I think Andre Bishop and Bernie Gersten at Lincoln Center thought that I would do it. And I think that Bob Crowley and I looked at each other over a vast distance and were terrified that people would think that we should do it because we'd done the others. But I didn't have an immediate affinity for it. I was terrified.
I would have thought that you, whenever you see a play, whether it's something you might do or not, you'd think, oh, gee, if I did it, I might do that, put your own stamp on it.
Yeah, I guess.
The way filmmakers look at films and say, gee, I would have shot that scene differently.
Yes, I know. I think people do that, and I've never been one of them. I take everything on its face value and sort of think, okay, here we go. This will be a new adventure.
My guest is Jack O'Brien, who is the director of The Coast of Utopia now. Shipwreck, which is the second part of the trilogy, opening tomorrow at the Vivian Beaumont at Lincoln Center, 150 West 65th Street. You mentioned earlier that this is a monumental thing. Is working on a Tom Sappard piece a way of educating yourself about something you've never encountered before?
Yes, I think that's probably true. I mean, Tom doesn't write a play about one thing. He writes... He tackles a subject matter into which is folded all sorts of other things. And so when you actually think, well, what is this play about? It's about many, many things usually and not one theme. And I think that the first thing one has to tackle when you deal with a Stoppard play is the levels of it and how layered it is.
For example, in this play, we're talking revolution, but then it's just as much, maybe even more ultimately, the story of a marriage and adultery.
Yes, it's that. But of course, that's uniquely Tom. I mean, he does find an area that he wants to dramatize about, but then, you know, he folds all these other egg whites into it, and you end up with a philosophic discourse and infidelity and history and all sorts of things that never occurred to you were signing on for when you first took it on.
How much did you know about this period in history before you began to work on the plays? And were you familiar at all with the five main Russian revolutionaries?
No, I'm shocked and ashamed. And I have to say to you, I knew nothing about it. This is ostensibly the backstory of the Russian Revolution. These are a cadre of intellectuals in the middle part of the 1800s.
It's the prequel.
It's the prequel, if you will. It absolutely is. And, you know, it's bad enough to quiz yourself on the quill, but the prequel becomes something completely different, you know.
You were quoted in the recent profile on Stoppard in the New York Times as saying, your job in directing this piece is, I'm quoting, to find the blood and heart because he has head enough for 50. So do you think a director's job in general is to equalize things and to bring balance to pieces that they work on?
Yes. You know what it is? Leonard, I think it's a kind of a dance. I think it's you dancing with the writer to try to figure out. I mean, if you look at a beautifully balanced ballroom couple on the floor, you know, he supports her, she compliments him. They don't get in each other's way in an odd way, but together they make more than just either one of them would have made as an impression. And I think when I encounter a script like this, I try to think, okay, the writer is definitely, in Tom's case, taking care of the intellectual thrust. Now, what are these people wearing? What do they sound like? How do I wrap them in emotion so that it doesn't become just a head exercise?
Well, how much table work did the ensemble do before you got on your feet?
A ton. First of all, I insisted that we sit with Tom at the table for a week and a half, where we read through everything and talked openly about what this is. And we didn't get it. We didn't understand it, I promise you. And even though Tom was incredibly patient and very forthcoming and illustrative, it wasn't until we began to hear the plays being voiced that we realized basically how great they are and how rich they are.
And how much research was done? I heard that some cast members traveled to Russia before rehearsals began.
They did. Four or five of them actually, in a burst of exuberance, just got on a plane and went over to Moscow and St. Petersburg.
And did they feel that it helped them?
I think they did, yes. I mean, there's the shock, of course, because things like that are never what you think they're going to be. And some of them, four or five of them, traveled together, and one went by himself and actually got to Primukino, which is the Bakunin estate, which is mentioned in the first play, but not so much in the second and third. And they did find that they soaked up a great deal, that they did absorb a great deal of not only national characters, but basically material that they could draw on later.
Because so much of these three plays takes place outside of Russia, Paris, London,
Geneva,
places.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned that Tom Sappard actually attends rehearsals. Not every playwright does that, and not every playwright is welcome at rehearsals.
I know, that's a tricky situation because, quite frankly, it's always different. There are writers who you really want around you, who are hip and theatrical and very, very receptive, and there are writers who are very, very rigid, and they only want it to go a certain way. Some who will be nameless, but I worked with a great deal of them. There's no point in not having Tom in the room. It's Tom. And all of the complexity that we're struggling with comes directly from his control and his mind. So I want, not only do I want the information, I want my company to have the information. I think to be alive and in the theater at this time and have proximity with unquestionably one of the greatest philosophers / playwrights of all time, let alone our time, why would I deny my actors that experience?
He also admits to changing his plays all along the way.
We're changing.
I have to come back and find out.
Well, it's not. It's at an O there. I mean, yes, it isn't.
First edition is never the same as the second edition.
No, and the printed edition is not remotely like what we're playing now. And unfortunately, because I think Tom is happier with this, having thinned it out, having clarified it. He said to me last night, "Do you think the audience gets this reference?" And I said, "No, what if we put this word in too?" And then we talked about that at the REM. Yes, that would work. And, you know, so he's constantly turning it over.
And since this is the fourth play that you've worked on with him, I am assuming that communication gets easier and easier.
It does, actually. I mean, I'm sort of over the awe, the stunned idea that I'm sitting with Tom Stoppard and having the effrontery to say, "Well, what do you think we should do with this?" But I mean, we're chums now, and we're in it together, and it's one of the great joys and surprises of my life.
My guest is Jack O'Brien, who's the director of Hairspray, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I'm just naming some of the more recent ones. And the trilogy, The Coast of Utopia, the second of those plays, Shipwreck, is opening tomorrow at the Vivian Beaumont in Lincoln Center. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Jack O'Brien, who is the director of the trilogy, The Coast of Utopia, Tom Stoppard's plays, that are now at the Vivian Beaumont at Lincoln Center. The second of the three, Shipwreck, is opening tomorrow. And although not much of the action takes place on the sea, all of the titles of the three plays refer to the sea. Voyage, Shipwreck. What's the third one?
Salvage.
So we're supposed to read something into those titles, I imagine.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, Tom has these resonances with almost everything he does. Alexander Herzen, who of the five guys, the gang of five that goes through this trilogy, who is probably the stem, the center of it. Herzen wrote a famous piece in the 1800s, in the 19th century, called From the Other Shore, meaning it was his take on what was going on in Russia from his exile. And I think that voyage to utopia is basically a metaphor for what this whole thing is. These young men leaving a very troubled and a very complicated country, stuck in the Middle Ages, basically, with serfdom, read slavery, and they're trying to make a better world, and they set out to do so, and voyage, shipwreck, and salvage are basically what happens.
And you want to make us aware of the fact that the serfs are always there,
yes,
even though they are not part of the play proper. You start off the first play with them all grouped together in the back of the stage. They are the servants. They are the people who move the sets.
That wasn't implicitly in the play. That was something that Bob Crowley, one of my two great designers, Scott Pask being the other one, scenic designers. I have three lighting designers and Kathy Zuber doing all those costumes, and Mark Bennett doing the beautiful music. But Crowley said, I think when the set is revealed, you should see all the serfs in Russia. And I thought that is incredible, particularly for America, because although they didn't do that in Trevor's production, and there was only one serf mentioned or even in the play, I felt that to do that on the backs of these anonymous people was the right thing to do. And also, then those people would turn into revolutionaries in Paris, and those people would turn into the expats or the émigrés in the last play.
Well, since you have 45 members of the in your cast, you can do that. And the cast that you've put together is kind of extraordinary. Brian O'Byrne, Jennifer Ely, Billy Crudup, David Harbour, Ethan Hawke, Martha Plimpton, Amy Irving, Richard Easton. I'm leaving out a whole bunch of important people, but this is kind of like an all-star cast.
It's unbelievable.
And you've gotten them to commit to how many months?
It's over nine. I mean, and now with the extension, it's a full year the way you look at it.
How many of them have done this sort of thing in the past? A number of them have worked in the theater, but most of these people are movie actors.
Yes, but this new generation of, quote, movie actors are very responsible guys, young men and women. They want to keep their chops fresh, and they love the theater. And they all love, if you just think back 20 years, movie stars of that propensity didn't go on the stage. They just didn't. It was years into Elizabeth Taylor's career before we saw her waddle across the stage. So, they want to do this, but none of them has done a rep before, where they play one play in the afternoon and another on the evening, and they're stupefied by it.
And one of the actors, Jason Butler-Hamer, actually turned down a TV series to do this.
Yes.
So this requires a certain amount of sacrifice.
Well, I said to Andre Bishop and Bernie Gersten when this started, I said, the only thing that concerns me is, well, not the only thing, but what really concerns me is I don't think I can do this without what I would call the A-team. Because to make it sing, to make it exciting, to make it theatrically electrifying, you need the kinds of actors that audiences simply want to come see anyway. And then to put them in a place situation as exciting and challenging as this, suddenly the chemistry changes inordinately.
Tom Stobart told me that he writes for the proscenium stage, and the Vivian Beaumont at Lincoln Center is a thrust. So what adjustments do you have to make for a play that was written with a proscenium in mind and then performed pretty much, well, not in the round, but in three-quarter round?
Well, I'll tell you, I learned a great lesson doing Henry IV with Kevin Kline and Ethan and a few others a couple years ago. Because I realized that the Beaumont Theater is vast, but it has this very intimate thrust, which I used as a close-up device. And quite frankly, when I did the Shakespeare, I did it almost as if it were in the round. And I used the box, I used the backstage, the big part of the Beaumont, for spectacle.
And what so it, that became the proscenium,
and then
the stuff that's closer to the audience became a close-up, more intimate thing.
Yeah, and so I didn't use the depth all the time, but when you needed to be close to the actors, I got you close to the actors. And that was a staggeringly exciting and very important step for me to learn about the rhythm of that theater.
Now, you mentioned that the serfs is something that you came up with in collaboration. What about some of the other images in the play? What are written in and what are director-designer choices? For example, the tableau scene in Shipwreck that's based on Manet's painting.
Tom asks for that.
Really?
Yeah. He says, in the script, he says there is a painting that predates this by 16 years, which is Manet's Déjeuner.
Postdates it, actually. It comes 16 years after.
Yeah, well, I mean, the scene predates the painting, is what I'm saying, by 16 years. And it's Manet's Déjeuner sur l'herbe with, you know, three or four clothed figures and a woman with no clothes on. And why Tom hit on this, I have no idea, but he evokes it. And it's actually a scene in which there are two locations simultaneously on stage. The naked woman and her friend are in one location. Her husband and Turgenev and the other man's wife are in another location. It takes you a little while to figure this out.
Because they're talking across
purposes.
Because
they're all there on the stage together, looking like the painting. And, you know, he borrows, you know, ruthlessly from every intellectual aesthetic corner he can find to make his concoctions. And that was asked for. And that's a tricky one to pull off, particularly in a thrust theater, because I wanted to protect, in this case, Jennifer Ely, so that she wasn't, shall we say, hung out to dry, as it were.
You have to be protected when you're in a thrust theater because there are people sitting on all sides.
Absolutely.
Shipwreck opens tomorrow. When do rehearsals for Salvage, the third piece, begin?
We'll start on the 2nd of January, and we open then on the 15th of February.
Now, none of the actors has to do all three, major roles in all three, and that, I'm sure, makes it a little easier for
them.
Well,
yeah, some of them do. I mean,
Herzen is a minor part in the first,
but
and then he's
has
bigger
the
than the other two.
Jason Butler-Harner goes straight through as Turgenev. Billy Crudup plays the first two. Amy Irving plays the first two. They're not in the third. But Jennifer Ely plays three different roles in 1, 2, and 3. So does Martha Plimpton. No, she plays the same woman in 2 and 3, but the woman in 2 is only like 17 or 16 years old. Then she grows up in the last play.
But you can't dismiss the ones who are not in the third, because after this is all over, aren't you going to do some marathon
productions? Oh, yes, we are. That's the glory of what's going on. And that really is why these extraordinary actors committed for such a long time, knowing that at the end, it isn't, you know, usually with a show like this, it's opening night, the opening night party, you play the run out, and God, Bob's your uncle, as we say. But in this case, because you're adding plays all the time, the glory of this experience for the company comes after late February, when on the weekends, they play all three plays in one day.
One thing that makes this project unique is that you have different designers to cover the three different parts of Utopia. And when Tim Mason, the lyricist for How the Grinch Stole Christmas, was on the show last Friday, he said that you have a gift for assembling design teams and getting them to communicate.
Interesting. Well, if I do, I'm grateful for the gift. I'm never aware of these things, of course, but I love a lot of energy in the room. I don't have to be right all the time. I don't think I ever could be right. It's not even important. I love the best idea. And if you've got a lot of highly energetic egos in the same room and you're able to listen to them, then you get phenomenal results. In the case of Coast, I have, and it wasn't by design, but I have three of the best lighting designers in the world, each doing a different play. Kenny Posner is doing the one that opens tomorrow night, and Brian McDevitt did Voyage, and Natasha Katz is doing Salvage. And this has never happened, to our knowledge, that one play takes the input from three different lighting designers who have to create a lighting plot that all three of them can use. Imagine.
A caller wants to know if he thinks you should see the plays in order or...
I do. I think it's... I keep saying to people, you know, you can see them. Several friends have seen part two that had not seen
because
part one.
Because they do stand alone.
They do. I think the third one would be the most difficult to see by itself.
And I understand that after this, you're going to get involved in another trilogy.
Yes.
From Puccini.
Yes, I'm going to the Met for my debut. 3 weeks later, I can't believe it, I'm on the ropes. I really am. I mean,
you're not going to take a break?
Well, I get 3 weeks off, and then I, you know, this is insane. I've got a lot, thank God I've got a lot of energy, but even for me, this is prohibitive and not wise.
Jack O'Brien is the director of the Coast of Utopia trilogy. Part 2, Shipwreck, opens tomorrow at the Vivian Beaumont at 150 West 65th Street. If you want ticket information, the number is 212-239-6200. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It was an honor and a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.